see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, dear kinswomen and kinsmen. I hope you're praying for me that I'll be able to continue. There hasn't been virtually any response at all. So, please pray. Or things that will go away. We're going to talk today about Rome. Last week I did Romulus and Remus. And it is interesting if Rome is the new settlement place of Edom. This particular show, the article was sent in from the Jewish Encyclopedia from a brother of ours, and it's entitled Rome. And it discusses many things from what I can see. I don't read these before the show. You know, I scanned over it a little bit just to see what was kind of there. But, I mean, we're talking about for a minute or two. So I think this is going to be interesting because of the first thing that I see right here. You have to think of things, you know, logically. If Romulus and Remus were of Esau's stock, they were Edomites, this could very well... The more I look into this thing, the more it appears that it's very possible because of the wickedness of Rome. I mean, not only has the wickedness of the Roman Empire been there, but then you have the wickedness of the Roman Catholic Empire that was there. So a lot of filth came out of this place. It starts off with this, Jews' early settlement in Rome. Listen to this. Capital in ancient times of the Roman Republic and Empire, in modern times of the Papal Dominions and of the modern Kingdom of Italy. Jews have lived in Rome. Listen to this statement. Jews have lived in Rome for over 2,000 years. Longer than in any other European city. They originally went there from Alexandria, drawn by the lively commercial intercourse between those two cities, which of course has to do with Cleopatra, right? If we remember last week. They may even have established a community there as early as the second pre-Christian century, for in the year 139 BC, the praetor Hispanus, Latin, get it? Issued a decree expelling all Jews who were not Italian citizens. Wait a minute then. Let me just stop right there and think about that. In 139 BC, the praetor Hispanus issued a decree expelling all Jews who were not Italian citizens, which implies to me that there were Jews that were Italian citizens. Very interesting, huh? Very, very interesting, because the Apostle Paul was a citizen. So we were told that no Jew could be a citizen of Rome. Weren't we told that? And I believed it. I had no reason not to believe it, but I don't believe it anymore, because it keeps coming up over and over that you could buy citizenship, or here we see what we're seeing right here. You see, they've lived there for over 2,000 years. Jews are race-mixing people that have to mix. So we've seen them be expelled from Spain and end up in the islands below Italy and mix with the Sicilians. Right? And when you see somebody like the Italian government, like Salvini today, this guy, he's certainly not a white man. You know, it was a psyop when you saw Italians, because the second wave of Italians that came to America were these what were known as WOPs or grease balls. They were the race-mixed Sicilians. But the first wave that came were blonde-haired, blue-eyed white people that were Italians. So through all of this time, there has been race-mixing going. If the Jews have been living in Rome for over 2,000 years, how much of Rome do you think has been race-mixed? A good question, isn't it? Remember that they were paired up with Hitler for the Second World War and they were absolutely useless? Does that sound like white people to you? So, that's very interesting. Hispanis, like Hispanic, they're Latins. This is the land of the Latin. He issued a decree expelling all Jews who were not Italian citizens. So there were Jews that were Italian citizens. During the last decades of the second century BC, after the war between the Hasmonean brothers on the one side and Caesar and Pompey on the other, the Jewish community in Rome grew very rapidly. I hope you're listening. The Jews who were taken to Rome as prisoners were either ransomed by their co-religionists or set free by their Roman masters, who found their peculiar custom obnoxious. They settled as traders on the right bank of the Tiber and thus originated the Jewish quarter in Rome. Get it? The Jewish quarter? That's a big chunk, right? The Jews identified themselves with Roman politics and exerted at times some influence at public meetings. Cicero, Pro Flacco, this was from chapter whatever it is, 66, obviously. They maintained constant commercial relations with Palestine and paid the temple tax in Jerusalem. For this reason, they were greatly interested in the proceedings of Flaccus. See Diaspora Fiscus Judaicus, excuse me. Caesar, on account of the assistance which the Jews had rendered him in his war with Pompey, showed his gratitude toward the Roman Jews by permitting them, listen, to hold public devotional exercises, otherwise not allowed in the city. Synagogues existed in Rome as early as the time of Augustus, as is evidenced by the enactment declaring their inviolability. The Jews were further favored in connection with the distribution of grain, for when the appointment occurred on the Sabbath, their share was reserved for them until the day following, expelled under Tiberius. The Jewish deputation, which petitioned for the deposition of the royal house of the Idumeans, was joined by 8,000 Jewish residents of Rome. Several Romans adopted Jewish customs, and some, as the rhetor Cilicius of Colacte, a friend of Dionysius of Halicarnassus. My goodness. Even embraced Judaism. So we had, same as today, we have people that embrace Judaism. Muller, Fragmenta Historicum Grae Corum, 331, that was the page, I guess. The reign of Tiberius until the removal of his minister, Sejanus, was fraught with misfortune for the Jews. When the cult of Isis was driven out of Rome, 19 after Christ entered. I don't know why they have to keep changing these things, you know what I mean, CE and all this stuff. They should just leave things the way it was and leave it be. I believe that means Christ enters. I don't know. You know, 19 CE. The Jews also were expelled because a Roman lady who inclined towards Judaism had been deceived by Jewish swindlers. The synagogues were closed, the vessels burned, and 4,000 Jewish youths were sent upon military service to Sardinia. After the death of Sejanus, the emperor allowed the Jews to return. The emperor Claudius was not unfavorably disposed toward the Roman Jews in the beginning of his reign, but in 49 and 50, in consequence of dissensions among them regarding the advent of the Messiah, they were forbidden to hold religious services. The leaders in the controversy and many others of the Jewish citizens left the city. A considerable number of Roman Jews who had become Christians received... A considerable number of Roman Jews who had become Christians received the Apostle Paul in Puteoli, 61, and Rome with due formalities. With regard, however, to Peter's sojourn in Rome, compare Jelinek BH, page 60, and Gudeman Gesch, page 44. Under Nero, the Jews of Rome had a comparatively peaceful time owing to the favorable attitude of the Empress Poppaea Sabina. Remember her? But this was followed by the terrible wars and the conquest of Judea under the emperors Vespasian and Titus. Judaism at Rome was now put on the footing of a privileged religion. Instead of its adherents being treated as a separate nation, and the Fiscus Judaicus was now levied for the benefit of the temple of Jupiter Capitolinus, a procurator ad Capitularia Judaeorum was empowered to collect this tax, and only those who had abandoned Judaism were exempt for paying it. Prominent families. After the war, the Jewish community in Rome increased rapidly. Among the prominent Jews resident there at the time, besides Josephus, King Agrippa, and his sister Bernice, are said to have been members of the four families from which the De Rossi, the Delgi Adolescentoli, the De Pomis, and the Delgi Piatelli families are descended. All right. So you see De Rossi, the red, right? You know what that means, De Rossi, right? Degli Adolescentoli, adolescent. And the De Palmas and the Degli Pietelli families were descended from Jews. And no, don't tell me that means that they were, you know, I'm not sure that Josephus is an Israelite. I do think he's a Jew. If you've seen the picture of his nose on the front of his books, unless that's, you know, a falsehood, he's got a huge hooked nose. There are people that tell you he's not a Jew, but it just told you here that he is a Jew. And of course, if he's not a Jew, does that mean King Agrippa is not a Jew? Herod Agrippa and his sister Berenice? See, these families are not Israelite families. The red, De Rossi, you get it? So, I mean, let's not try to pull anything here. The pressure of taxation rendered under the condition of the Jews were unfavorable, under Vespasian and Titus. And it grew worse through the increasing number of those who abandoned professed to abandon Judaism to escape the payment of taxes. These defections at last became so numerous that the Emperor Domitian, in the beginning of the 10th decade, found it necessary to adopt stringent measures. Every suspect was examined individually, and if the suspicions entertained were confirmed, he was severely punished. Dio Cassius, page 2. Among those sentenced to death or banishment for various reasons were the emperor's nephew Flavius Clemens and his wife Domitilla. Rabbis Gamaliel, Rabbis Gamaliel, Joshua, Eliezer, and Akiba preached in the synagogues in Rome during their brief stay and engaged in disputes with the Judeo-Christians. See, this can't be proper history if they're calling them Judeo-Christians. Unless this term means Jews that have ascribed to Christianity, which they never do, right? The Jews do not appear to have been affected by the severe decrees issued by Hadrian after the Jewish uprising. At this time, there lived in Rome Theudas, who assisted in maintaining the teachers in Palestine and reintroduced the preparation of the Paschal Lamb among the Jewish communities of Rome, the Jewish communities. During a diplomatic visit which R. Simeon ben Yohai and R. Eliezer B. Jose made to Rome in the second century, they preached in the synagogues upon halakhic subjects, and they maintained intimate relationships with R. Mattathiah ben Haresh, the founder of the Jewish seminary in Rome, himself from Palestine. Until the death of the last of the Antonius Commodus, the Jews suffered as much from the misfortunes that befell Rome as formerly they had benefited by its growth, especially severe in their effects upon the Jews were the famine, the flood, and the conflagration under Antoninus Pius, and Marcus Aurelius. Under Commodus, commode is another word for a toilet. Sorry, but that is kind of funny, right? Under Commodus, they suffered the consequences of a fire caused by an earthquake. In 204, Septimius Severus issued an order against conversion either to Judaism or to Christianity. On the other hand, the edicts of Severus and Caracalla confirmed all native-born Jews in their rights. Native-born Jews had rights, see? He confirmed them in their rights. They might even fill government offices while adhering to their faith. You listening? Judaism became a privileged religion, religio licita. I would say that means licensed religion or privileged religion. The condition of the Jews remained much the same under Elagabalus. Alexander Severus treated them so favorably, he was called derisively Archosynagogus, quote unquote. You see? You see now why the Roman Empire was the swill hole it was? Just like our country is now a swill hole. Under Christian emperors, a new era began with the reign of Constantine. They don't say his name is Jesus Constantine, but that's his name, right? In 312, this emperor, as soon as he had defeated his adversary Maxentius, openly embraced Christianity. The institutions of the Roman Jews were not molested, but they were thenceforth regarded as citizens of the second class, as were the pagans. Of greater importance, however, was the prohibition against circumcising slaves. Constantine issued a decree forbidding marriage between Jews and Christians and making the violation of this order punishable with death. Now, isn't that interesting? Why would Jews be marrying Christians? Well, because Jews would pretend they were Christians. Probably, right? I mean, this is remarkable that this stuff is going on, and it just goes on and on. You know, no wonder there's so many Jews in the world now, right? So, in the edicts issued by him, the Jews are for the first time referred to as a shameful or bestial sect. Well, of course they're shameful, and of course they're bestial. They're the most subtle beast of the field. Contemptible and perverse, yes they are. Secta nefaria, or feralia. Feral, you know, I think that's what it means. Terpis, or perversi, perversed. Another turning point in the history of Roman Jewry came when the Emperor Julian, oh yes, he loved them, the apostate, ascended to the throne. Remember Julian, the lover of the Antichrists? Remember that particular show a little while ago? Though not inclining towards Judaism, he regarded it as superior to Christianity, and one of his first acts was to abolish the Fiscus Judaicus, which had then existed for 300 years, thereby placing the Jews on an equal footing with other citizens. Uh-oh. Now listen to this, right? Remember I said that Napoleon had put the Jews on equal footing with the other citizens of France. Well, here we have this happening before that. So he placed them on equal footing with other citizens. Julian's successor, Valentinian, freed the synagogues from the obligation of quartering soldiers. This, however, resulted in Bishop Philaster's visiting Rome during his annual tour of inspection, middle of the 4th century, when he preached in public and won several converts to the Christian faith. Emperor Gratian revoked 382, that's the year, the decree releasing the Jews from filing the office of decurion. During the reign of Maximus, 383 to 388, who courted the favor of the Christians, a tumult broke out against the Jews, one of their synagogues being totally destroyed in 387. Maximus ordered the synagogue rebuilt at the expense of the state. Remember this? But he was defeated and slain by Theodosius before his order could be carried out. The rule of Theodosius was not unfavorable, was not an unfavorable one for the Jews, inasmuch as they were placed under the protection of the civil law, and the poorer ones among them were exempted from service among the Navicolari, a body on which devolved the provisioning of the capital. On the other hand, two laws were enacted by Honorius, which made it compulsory for the Jews to fill communal offices. In civil cases in which the Jewish disputants failed to reach an agreement, they were obliged to submit their cases to a Roman court, and Jews were not allowed to enter the state church merely to escape material liabilities. Let me say one thing. If you remember, they were getting themselves entrenched into the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, right? This is what was talked about when we were reading the Maurice Pinet's book. And it's very interesting that if they pretended they were Christians, they never kept to their vow. They never really adhered to it. And they still don't today. They never have. So, very interesting what's being said here, right? On April 22nd, 404, Honorius issued an edict in which he declared Jews and Samaritans unfit for military service. At the same time, at the request of the Roman Jews, he revoked the order forbidding the collecting of money for the support of the patriarchal house. Also, I would mention that this sect of Simon Magus, they were infiltrating the Roman Catholic Church around this time as well. And they became a church within a church, so to speak, a congregation within a congregation. Let's put it more like that. That's an easier way to say it. In other words, a bunch of people within the Roman Catholic Church's congregation who had influence. I do believe that the Apostle Paul was sent to Rome just like Simon Magus was, for the purpose of working together from, in other words, taking over the Christian thing from both sides. In other words, eventually, Simon Magus would have, his followers, after he died, would infiltrate that church. And Paul was working on the other people. You know what I mean? Very interesting. Very interesting. So that, you know, to control Christianity, you realize that Rome became the capital of Christianity instead of Jerusalem. And that's because Paul was there. And they called it a Gentile church, just so you'll know. So it continues. The bishops in Rome, in the meanwhile, betrayed the little anti-Jewish feeling. In the 5th century, Pope Galatius especially evinced a very unprejudiced spirit towards the Jews. Among his immediate associates was Telenesis. Let me say that again. Telesinus. Yeah, that's better. The first Jew mentioned in a papal document. Who, together with his family, was greatly favored by the bishop. Theodoric the Great, 493 to 526, showed himself very just toward the Jews. It is true that the former edicts against them remained in force and that they were not allowed to build any new synagogues in Rome, yet he held to the principle that no man ought to be forced to accept another religion against his conviction. The Jews liked that. In the same spirit, he granted to the Jews certain privileges, which placed them on an equal footing with the Romans and the Goths. During Theodoric's reign, a terrible uprising took place in Rome when some slaves who had murdered their Jewish masters and who had been punished by the authorities gained the sympathy of the mob, which attacked the Jews and set fire to the synagogue. The leaders of the disturbance were severely punished at the order of the emperor. There are also reports about the dissension between the Samaritans and the Christians, the former claiming a house which belonged to the latter. See, the Samaritans were claiming a house belonging to the Christians. Notice how the Christians were against the Samaritans. That's because the early Christians knew that Jesus said, don't go to the Samaritans. They're race-mixed people. They came from Babylon. You can see, right? You can see just like the so-called Judea, right? You can see that this is a race-mixed, multi-culti place, this Rome, which is also very telling that it has Jewish overtones, like New York, like Los Angeles, like Chicago. Wherever they are, it turns into multi-culti land. That's what happened in Sicily. Not only are the Sicilians mixed with Jews, they're mixed with Arabs and Negroes, Moors. Very interesting, isn't it? You know, I had a moment of wow for a second when I realized it said that Judea in 1933 claimed war against Germany, went to war with Germany, right? Judea. Not Judah. But they try to say that Judea, and I'll go into this, that Judea is where, you know, the tribe of Judah. You see, if you listen to the Finley recording I put up on my BitChute, you need to listen to it many, many times because you'll understand about Judea that, again, just like Rome here, it was when we were taken into captivity to Babylon. The Edomites came up and took over the area, and they brought in Hittites. They brought in people that came from the north, but not of the tribes of Israel. There were people that moved into that land and claimed it for their own after the 10 tribes had left that land. Some of them came in. That's where Samaria is, I believe, actually. You see? So there's a lot of strange happening. So we were a minority by the time we came back from Babylon. So it was a multi-culti, race-mixed area. And, of course, the Edomites had control not only over the merchantry, you know, the all the merchants were Jews, but they had control over the priesthood and the government, which is one and the same, you really, when it comes to where Israel was. So it's not what you think it is. So interestingly enough, Judea declares war on Germany in 1933. Judea. They didn't even dare call themselves Judah, which is kind of interesting. So, Christians, okay, so there also had reports about dissension between the Samaritans and the Christians, the former claiming a house which belonged to the latter. After the death of Theodoric, war broke out anew, in which the Jews sided with the Goths, who, however, were defeated. Remember, we read all about this more in detail than this, too, right? Entrance to ancient Jewish catacombs at Rome. From an old drawing, it's, you know, it shows some drawings. Under the early popes, plan of the ghetto at Rome, 1640, from Zeller Itineraria Italiae. From the latter part of the 6th century, the popes were the real lords of Rome. The 6th century, really? You see, that's kind of strange, right? Because wasn't it 606? Somewhere around that area? Supposedly? Anyway, from the latter part of the 6th century, the popes were the real lords of Rome, and the Jews in the city, as well as in the whole country, were dependent on their attitude. Gregory the First, 6th century, excuse me, right. I got you. It took a little while. That's the 500s, right. So Gregory the First in 590 to 604 showed himself very just and mild towards them, the Jews. He forbade the enactment of any unjust laws against them and decidedly opposed compulsory baptism. The following words appear for the first time in a letter written by him. Just as the Jews in their communities may not be allowed any liberties beyond the measure allotted to them by law, so must they, on the other hand, suffer no violation of their rights. St. Gregory Epistula, page 25. These words afterward became the Magna Carta of the Jews. In spite of the severity with which the Pope proceeded against the slave trade of the Jews, he even ordered that the slaves be taken from them by force. Let me stop right there on that. Okay, if the Jews were controlling the slave trade in the 600s, and of course, I'm sure much before that, that also goes along with them controlling the slave trade of bringing Negroes to America. Correct? They still control the slave trade today. They controlled it way back then and all the way through. They were allowed to do that even under the Roman government. But remember, they had put in laws at certain points where Jews couldn't have Christians as slaves. Remember that? See, you just have to think about it. You know what I mean? The blacks want to blame the white people for bringing them here to America as slaves, but blacks had blacks as slaves, and mostly Jews had the money here and had all the property, you know, all the big cotton plants down there, and they had slaves. Not very many Americans had any slaves. Jews are not Americans, and blacks are not Americans. The Jews are the ones that brought them here. Even the Jews, even though the Jews aren't really a seafaring people, they buy the ships and they have people run the ships for them because they're really not capable. So, at this point, so it says that in spite of the severity which the Pope proceeded against the slave trade of the Jews, he even ordered that the slaves be taken from them by force. He was unable to abolish it. This was due to the fact that several of the Roman Jews who trafficked in slaves managed to evade the edicts by bribes and pretended baptism. You see, they were forced to be Christians by the church, and it was all a falsehood. They never became Christians. And of course, bribes. Are the Jews involved in bribes today, and have they been involved all the way through the last 2,000 years at least with bribes? Yeah. So, during the reign of this pope, the Roman Jews especially did much to assist their co-religionists in southern France and in Greece. Their co-religionists in southern France in Greece. The centuries immediately following were dark and troublous ones for the Jews of Rome. The Emperor Ludwig II 855 to 70, 875, is said to have issued an edict in 855 ordering all Italian Jews, no such thing, to leave the country. Now all, not just the ones who weren't citizens, before the 1st of October in that year. This order, however, was not carried into effect. A decade later, the Bishop of Orta attempted to introduce a special Jewish dress, which, however, was forbidden by Pope Nicholas the First. Good old Saint Nick. Another name for the devil, Nicholas. As to the reign of Pope John the 12th, sometimes called Octavian, 955 to 964, and the coronation of Otto the Great, see Josipian edition Breithaupt, just like Adam Weishaupt, right? Spelt the same kind of way, like Breitbart and Weishaupt together. During the following 300 years, the prosperity of the Roman Jews greatly increased and is especially conspicuous when compared with the experiences of their co-religionists throughout the world during the same period. From the Crescentians to the Tusculans on the throne of St. Peter, they suffered comparatively little. In 1007, Jacob ben Jekuthel, let me see if I can set, yeah, Jekuthel, went to Rome from Lorraine. That's in France, I believe. He mentions a Bet Din, which he founded there. That's B-E-T and then a separate word, D-I-N, which he founded there. The president of which bore the title of Nasi, N-A-S-I. About 15 years later, in 1021, a Jewish persecution took place in Rome. A violent earthquake had occurred, which some Greeks maintained was caused by a desecration of a picture of Jesus by the Jews in their synagogue. For that reason, Benedict the VIII sentenced to death some Jews who had been pointed out as the chief offenders. Now here we are with the Jews. The Perugioni family. At this time, the Perugioni family, the founder of which was a Jew, began to come into prominence. In the war between Pope and Emperor, it sided with the former, in other words, with the Pope. And for a short time, a member of the family held the papal office. Of the popes of the 11th century, special mention should be made of Nicholas II, who condemned the persecutions of the Jews, and who on several occasions expressed himself against compulsory baptism. According to a ceremonial instituted by Otto III, Jews and Christians were obliged to attend the entry into the city of a pope or an emperor, singing laudatory hymns. It is known that Pope Paschal II, Emperor Henry V, and Calixtus II were thus received in Rome by them. The last named issued a bull promising protection for the Jews, and this bull began with, it sure is a lot of bull, ladies and gentlemen, and this bull began with the introductory words of the edict issued by Gregory I, sicut Judaeus non. They didn't go into too much of the Jewish popes there. They didn't mention that there were three of them. The Plataea Judaica of the, Judea of the old ghetto at Rome. From a photograph, it shows you a photograph of it. Of the rabbis and teachers of the Roman community, there exists only an incomplete list. Among the latter, the most famous was Nathan ben Jehiel, who in 1088 established a ritual bath in Rome, and who with his brother Abraham erected a synagogue, which was completed in 1101. As the importance of the popes in the Christian world had increased with the growth of the German influence, the Roman congregation had come to occupy an honored position in the Jewish world, and questions were addressed to it even from Paris. Luzzatto, Ben Ha-Ozar. After the death of Honorius II, Cardinal Perlioni ascended the papal throne as Anacletus II. Okay, so it was Gregory VI, Gregory VII, and this fellow here, Anacletus II, is the third one. In the struggle which ensued between him and his rival Innocent II, the Jews of Rome sided with Anacletus. Of course, with a Jew. Bernard of Clairvaux urged against Perlioni his Jewish descent. The Pope was accused also of having been assisted by the Jews in robbing the church and in realizing the value of the stolen goods. His successor, Innocent II, did not renew the protective bull of Calixtus II, nor did he curtail the rights of the Jews. It was during his reign and during the reigns of his immediate successors that Abraham ibn Ezra sojourned in Rome until 1144. His presence in the city gave a new impetus to study, and the foremost men of the city, as Joab ben Solomon and Menahem ben Moses, attached themselves to him, the group thus formed being termed by the contemporary scholars the wise men of Rome, quote-unquote. Jews are the wise men of Rome, see? Alexander III occupied a peculiar position towards the Jews. When pressed for money, he was very favorably disposed towards them. And Benjamin of Tudela tells us how contented the Jews were under him. He had even a Jewish financial agent, a descendant of Jacob Jehiel, who filled his office very satisfactorily. To him was probably due the fact that the protective bull was renewed. But the Pope showed himself in a different light at the Third Lateran Council in 1179. He denounced, especially, though in vain, the employment by Jews of Christian servants, and he prescribed severe sentences for nurses who entered the service of Jews. It was not allowed to repair the synagogues as long as they were not actually in danger of collapsing. Converts to Christianity might not be disinherited. The most prominent representatives of Roman Jewry at this period belonged, besides Jehiel, his cousin Daniel Joab and Menahem ben Judah, with the latter, the Frenchman Joseph ben Pilat, maintained a correspondence. At the head of the community stood Judah ben Moses, Innocent III, and Gregory IX. Innocent III, at the Fourth Lateran Council in 1215, enacted that Jews and Mohammedans should wear badges. Hey, that's right. That they should not be permitted to hold public offices, and that they should sign a quitclaim for the interest on the loans furnished the Crusaders. Innocent's successor, Honorius III, 1216 to 1227, tore down the new synagogues in Rome. The pontificate of Gregory IX greatly affected the Jewish community. His early decisions gave evidence of a deep hatred of the Jews. My kind of guy, Honorius III. Honor. It's H-O-N-O-R-I-U-S. Well, Gregory IX is the one that had the deep hatred for the Jews. But he was reminded by a Jewish ambassador from France that there were Christians in heathen countries. And it was this consideration, perhaps, that led him to issue, April 4th, 1233, a bull protecting the Jews. It seems that about this time, a fast day was instituted in Rome, for which occasion Benjamin Ben Abraham Anam, And Moses ben Abraham wrote some elegies, Kobez al-Yad 6 and 17. The Jewish source, Codex Angelinus, page 7, relates that in the reign of Innocent IV, the Jews, in consequence of a drought which affected the whole district of Rome, were compelled to use imported tomatoes on Sukkot. During the reign of Alexander IV, 1254 to 61, Jewish names again appear in official documents after the interval of 750 years. On February 1st, 1255, a papal order was issued granting certain commercial privileges to a Jewish merchant named Sabbatanus Musus Salomon, who is mentioned as the business associate of several Romans and who stood in commercial relationships with the Vatican. The privileges pertained into trading in the papal states and in Sicily. The period following the death of Frederick II, when Germany was without an emperor, saw the rise of flagellants, whose activity was not without its influence on Judaism, especially upon the community of Rome, which thought that the messianic time was at hand. Monatsschrift 239. These ideas gathered strength during the disturbances which attended the senatorial elections in Rome, in consequence which Pope Alexander III had been forced to leave the city forever. Arc of Octavian, the entrance to the old ghetto at Rome. It's just showing you a picture there. A fire that broke out in the Jewish quarter, the Trastevere, on September 26, 1268, destroyed one of the oldest synagogues and 21 Torah scrolls. Yeah, I'm sure they were Torah scrolls, yeah. On account of large sums of money the Jews had loaned him, Charles of Anjou felt himself under obligation to protect the Jews from the injustice done them by Urban IV, Alexander's successor, who had issued on July 26, 1267, a bull, Turbato Corde, extending the powers of the Inquisition. About this time, it appears, a tumult occurred within Rome which resulted in the destruction of the entire Jewish cemetery. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound familiar to you? Just having a sip of my iced coffee. Jeez, the Jewish cemetery. And which had been recorded by Benjamin ben Abraham in his elegy. Gregory, in 1272, Gregory X confirmed the bull granting protection to the Jews, to which was added the clause that Christians should not be allowed to give testimony in Jewish lawsuits. It also insisted on the absurdity of the blood accusation. Pope Nicholas III, in a bull issued May 7, 1278, encouraged the Inquisition to proceed against converts. During the reign of this pope, Bongoda or Biongoda of Montpellier, I guess that's how you say it, Montpellier, stayed for some time at Rome as special ambassador. So, very interesting. The presence of the imposter Abraham ben Samuel Abulafia, geez, that has mafia in it without an M, Abulafia, whom the Pope endeavored to convert, had no influence upon the Roman Jews. A decision with regard to a ritual question, the only one made in Rome in this early period and handed down, was rendered during the reign of this Pope, Berliner Pelletat Soferum, page 9. The pontificate of Nicholas IV was of great importance to the Jews of Rome. When he found, through his physician Isaac ben Mordecai, Maestro Gaio, so that means Master G-A-J-O, Master Gaggio, that clergy of Rome treated the Jews with cruelty, violated their rights, and deprived them of their property, he interfered. The position which this physician occupied secured him great respect within his own community, and he used his influence to introduce the study of Maimonides in Rome. When the Maimonidean controversy broke out in France, the Roman community took such a lively interest in it that they sent R. Simha to France to procure a copy of Maimonides' commentary on the Midrash. When Maimonides' grandson died in 1299, the community sent a letter of condolence to Maimonides' son, Abraham. Isn't it interesting how Rome goes out of its way to help these enemies of the world? And isn't it interesting of what happened to Rome? So this Rome had this secret relationship with Jews, really, when you really look at this whole thing. You know what I mean? It's always been there. And they could hold office at times, and they got themselves involved in the church and got themselves in the cardinals' offices and bishops' offices and things like that, right? And they could wield their influences from both of these places, not to mention, now you got a doctor. So, you see, these people have been at it for a long time, and they're used to doing this in all countries. You see that Rome was doomed anyway. If it started off as a kingdom of Edom, it certainly ended up a Jewish hellhole, no doubt about it. Again, the Father gives me the equation. Corruption leads to chaos, and chaos leads to judgment. If you help the enemies of the world, the enemies of the kingdom, the enemies of our race and our nations, you're going to receive the same judgment that they get, probably even harsher. I think we'll stop right there. We'll stop. It's Boniface the Eighth will be the next part. And I mean, it's worth reading this. This is a little more look into the history. You can see it's not as deep as Maurice Panay's. But at least in this document, this is a Jew. They're telling you about the Jewish popes, at least two of them anyway. Whereas we never saw that in Maurice Panay's book. Of course, we didn't finish that book either. We may take a look back into it, who knows? But all I'm saying is this is good history of Rome, and you can see that the Jews were coddled. They were, yeah, they were persecuted here and there, but it wouldn't surprise me if those persecutions were caused by rabbis just to keep the people in line, the Jewish people in line, you see? See, they don't want them to, the only reason they would do that is not because, this isn't some conspiracy. It's that they don't want them to meld in with the people. They want them to stay Jews. They want them to stay on their side. They don't want them to melt into the population and go against Jewry. It's just that simple, you know what I mean? So, we're going to put that there, and we're going to hit that there. So, I always give a piece of advice at the end of the Rabbit Hole Radio Show. Don't go down the wrong hole.
Belonged you.
see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Of time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best as you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without a face.